Hey everybody, I'm Katherine Haland.
And I'm Kelly Jones, and you're listening to Pioneer Radio.
Let's talk about radio, because radio is so good.
I'm going to tell you something, Flacca, and I want you to listen tight.
Telling stories to regular folks is not a trivial thing.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Even if it's hard to explain, even if you know they don't really want to hear it, not really, I urge you to give it a try.
You have my undivided attention.
Take a chance, find the words, find the metaphor, share the beauty, tell them a story.
Each week on Pioneer Radio, we choose a topic. We talk about it, we ask you to talk about it, and we ask some experts to weigh in.
This week, we're going to talk about going back to school.
It's September, the leaves are changing, it's getting colder.
Yeah, I've been buying coffee just to hold it for its warmth.
I don't feel bad about eating those Mennonite donuts from the farmer's market anymore. I put away my shorts and unpacked my cords.
When I smell wood smoke, I think, oh, quaint, a tunnel.
Instead of, oh my god, fire. It's a good, familiar feeling.
Part of that familiarity, for both of us, and we imagine a lot of people in Guelph, are the rituals involved in going back to school.
As September rolled around, I'd start to get really, really, not nervous, but really kind of antsy and really, and I didn't know why for a long time, because for years and years and years, I would always have a kid going back to school, at least one kid going back to school. And then I was going back, and there was always somebody who was going back to school. So when September comes, I think it must be, I mean, I must be like a plant. The day length affects me. I would start to feel that I should be doing something.
Everyone who's been to school knows about these rituals. But when you're heading to school for the first time, it can be a little daunting. Okay, so it's on.
No!
No, it's okay. It's okay. I'm just going to leave it.
After a little convincing...
But you can just talk to me. Just like you would normally.
Andreas agreed to tell me his name.
My name is Andreas Haley. I'm a professor in integrative biology. I remember the first few days in elementary school. So not kindergarten. I remember kindergarten, actually, because that was very, very stressful. I never wanted to go. My mom had to drive me there, and then she had to stay there for at least half an hour to make sure I'm staying, and I would cry and make a huge noise and fuss. And then after my parents gave me a big teddy bear, I decided to stay.
So did you bring the teddy bear with you to school?
I was allowed in the beginning, and then I wasn't allowed anymore. But then I liked kindergarten already.
There's something great about the early days of school. Teddy bears and playgrounds and the chance to make new friends. We got a first-hand account of what that process is like from Jai Consola Willux.
So say your whole name.
Jai Consola Willux.
And what? How old are you?
Six.
And where do you go to school?
Central.
Jai invited me into his tree fort to talk about school. In the background, you might hear Jai's older brother Simon Willux demonstrating a perfect headlock. That's just part of the risks our interviewees take here on Pioneer Radio.
How long have you gone to school there? For like a week?
2 weeks.
2 weeks?
Well, 1 week we were... It was only 4 days, not a little week. And that was the first week. And the second week's basically full school.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow's going to be the next week.
So you've only been there for 2 weeks. Did you make a lot of friends?
No.
Any enemies?
No.
No?
Actually, I made three enemies.
You made three enemies in your first 2 weeks of school.
Yeah, in my first week, actually.
How'd you do that?
They were playing and I was minding my own business.
Here, we'd just like to point out that Jai's mom might be listening, so we'll censor this story to protect the innocent. So there Jai was, minding his own business.
And they were playing.
Yeah. And then what happened?
Then they became my enemies.
Do you think it's hard to make friends when you go to a new school?
Yeah.
Why?
Some people don't like you and some people do.
Is it fun?
Yeah.
Yeah? You like to go to school?
Yeah.
For now?
Yeah. For now.
Someday, Jai might attend the high school that Simon is at right now.
I'm Simon Wellox.
And how old are you?
15.
What grade are you in?
Just started grade 10.
And where do you go to school?
GCDI.
Is that in Guelph?
Yes.
Where did you go to school before that?
Willow Road.
And before that?
Central. Before Central is in Spain.
Yeah.
For grade 5.
And before that?
Lawrence Grassy, which is in Canmore, Alberta.
Oh, wow. Okay. Is that the first one?
No. And then there's Elizabeth Rummel, which is also in Canmore, Alberta.
You've had the back-to-school experience...
Multiple times, so...
Is it the same every time?
Like, Pretty much, except for in Spain. Spain was different because I was English.
Right.
People spoke Spanish, so...
Did you speak any Spanish?
Nope, I never. It was tough because the culture and stuff.
How is going to high school for the first time different from going to another kind of school for the first time?
It's hugely different because everyone, they treat you differently. The teachers, definitely, they trust you more and they treat you better.
Yeah.
And you get a lot more freedom just for everything, like being able to pick what you want to do. And, like, even just where you want to eat lunch, mm-hmm. you can eat it wherever you want. Mm-hmm. It's not like a designated lunch room.
That's
nice. It's like, I mean, there's a cafeteria and stuff, but you could eat it, like, in a tree if you really wanted to. My favorite part is being able to pick what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Even just, like, what difficulty level of the course.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm doing all academic, but... Just having the ability to pick that is good.
As you grow older, you hopefully gain more responsibility, and your responsibilities as a student might conflict with your responsibilities at work or at home. Sometime between high school and university, the real world starts to catch up with you. So how do we come to juggle different roles when they can all demand that we treat them as the most important one?
What amazes me is that so many university students are also working.
This is Emily.
I'm Emily. I'm a third-year student at the University of Guelph. My major, though I haven't yet declared it, is something like environmental governance, but I minor in women's studies, and that's what I'm really interested in. I'm not going to finish my university degree in 4 years. I'm probably going to take like the next several years to finish it up. I'm taking next semester off to do Katimovic, a federally funded Government of Canada program. It's been around for like 30 plus years. I think it'll be good to take, because like the more time I take off school, the more I can appreciate coming back to it. Like I hate being in school and feeling like my soul's being sucked out. Like I loved learning, and I sometimes forget how much I love it when I'm bogged down with exams and papers in the university setting.
Emily pointed out to us that well-timed breaks are really important.
I mean, in theory, the things you're learning, well, as an arts student, like, they're applying to my life all the time. I don't step out of women's studies. I live women's studies. I
And I always say that, like, oh, I don't need to study for this exam. I just live it. I'm just going to live my answers on the paper. And I think that being able to step away from, like, a lecture, having to get work done is good, but, like, if I was stepping out of the theories or the like, big grand concepts I was learning, it wouldn't be a worthwhile experience. Like, I think that's the most important part of education. And when I find that I'm stepping myself completely out of it, like, at the end of 2 semesters in a row, at the end of 8 months of, like, pulling my hair out because I have midterms and exams, and I'm also trying to balance a social life with that, and I don't even work. I can't even imagine if I was also working. That's when I, like, hate being in school. And then I come back and I'm, like, my most creative, my most energetic, like, I'm most excited to learn. I sit in class and, like, stare at my profs with puppy dog eyes, and that's why I'm excited. And then I always want it to be like that.
But what if, like Emily, your breaks from school drive you back to school with new ideas and a refreshed sense of creativity? What if you're driven back to school after 40 years?
My name is Margie Taylor, and for about 30 years, I was a host, broadcaster, writer, commentator with CBC Radio and Television. I worked in Vancouver for 10 years, Calgary for 10 years, England for a couple of years, and I've also hosted shows in Northern Ontario and in Toronto. I left the CBC in 2002, and I went back to school. I didn't leave to go back to school. I left because I came to the end of a contract and there didn't seem to be anything else terribly interesting for me to do. So it was kind of a mutual decision that it was time for me to move on. So I went back to school. I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, but I had it in my head that after 30 years of interviewing people about the exciting, interesting things they did, I'd like to be the kind of person that other people interviewed.
This feeling of not wanting to settle, of wanting to have new and varied experiences, seems common among many mature students. Here's Pat Boley.
Okay, my name is Pat Boley. Okay, I'm a Guelph person. I started actually here as an undergrad student in the early 1970s, if you can believe it, in French and English. Those are my favorite things. I really enjoyed French, but I switched for some reason to science. After 4 semesters, I moved to Winnipeg, and then when I was in Winnipeg, I did an undergrad degree in honors BSc and a master's in the Department of Agriculture, Crop Physiology. And I returned to Guelph. When I returned to Guelph, I did, after a few years, a master's here at the Department of History in Canadian history with a focus on Canadian rural history and conservation. And there's a conservation commission in the early 1900s that I studied. The reason I did this, I've always been interested in both the arts and the sciences, but at the time I didn't realize that there was such a thing as a history of science. I had no idea. So I did a master's and MA in history, and then a few years later, in between times I did some other things, I went to U of T and did a master's in history and philosophy of science and technology. So from then until now, that's what I've done, and then I applied to Guelph and I was accepted as a PhD student, and I'm working in the history of Canadian agricultural science and Canadian agriculture. So it's sort of combining history and science with a very specific focus, which is Ontario agriculture, actually.
As you can imagine, mature students face a unique set of challenges. Here's Margie again.
I was always the oldest one in the class.
Yeah.
And I mean, the profs had a tendency to, you know, they'd mention something that happened in the 60s and say, well, you remember that, Margie. I'd say, you know, do we have to keep reminding everybody? Yes, I actually do remember it. Okay, fair enough. But you don't have to keep saying it. And then, of course, I mean, I think all but one of the profs was younger than me, too. The funniest thing was when I was applying to get in, you needed references. and they wanted you to give the references of your undergraduate profs. Well, they're all dead. You know, that was 32 years ago when I graduated from, as with my BA, right? They're gone, they're gone.
Well, that's certainly a unique challenge. Fortunately for Margie, once she got recommendations and got back into the classroom, she discovered that she loved being in school just as much as ever.
In terms of actually being in the classroom, I just felt like I was back in my métier, back where I should be. I loved school when I was a kid. I loved it at university. I liked the classroom setting, for the most part. And I'm good at it. Like, I really like to learn. I didn't find any of that challenging at all. I really liked it. I enjoyed the classes I was with. I felt that I contributed without being overbearing. I really enjoyed meeting and learning from the other students. The great thing about the rural studies program that I was in was that it attracts students from all over the world. So, you know, here in Guelph, in your average normal life, I say normal, whatever that is, but certainly in my life, I don't meet a lot of people from other cultures, particularly, you know, and certainly not a lot of visible minority cultures. So it was just interesting to learn. You know, one of the women I got really close to had like me come back to school after she was older as well. She was from Peru, so her challenges were, here she was, you know, Spanish speaking, and now she's in the PhD program doing her studies in English. I mean, that's major, you know. At least I had the language, you know. If you go back to school in your 50s, like I did, there's school and there's all this stuff, but I still have all these other things. I mean, while I was going to school, my 22-year-old daughter began having grand mal seizures, so I had 4 years of dealing with that before she had brain surgery. I mean, she had the brain surgery the same year that I was graduating. So, I mean, there were a lot of other things going on. There were glitches, but I just really, really enjoyed it. It was so fun.
Returning to school after such a long break is not exactly like riding a bike for everyone. Some mature students get back to school and feel like there's a place for them in the academy, while others, however, find that going back to school is more challenging. Here's Karen Turkington.
Okay, my name is Karen Turkington. I decided to go back to school at 48. I'd been working at a contract position, and I really wanted to move ahead, and found that I was competing with people who had master's degrees, and I thought, you know what, I better get one of those. I almost did a thesis rather than a major paper, and that would have been on women and literacy at an organization in Elmira, but for some reason that fell through, and then my advisor and I together just thought, why not write about what I'm going through and what I know, which is being a midlife woman going back to school. So that's what I did. I was always aware that I was a mature student, but I did find it difficult working with other students who were in their 20s because I didn't always feel accepted. I didn't feel part of the group, and it depended on what students were in the group. Most were okay, but I did notice at times, I remember being in a group and one woman would not make eye contact with me ever, and she kind of sat with her back to me, and I just thought, why is she doing that? Like, that's just so rude. And I didn't say anything, and I just tried to participate, but I just felt like running out of the room and not being there. I just wanted to go home. Yeah, it was really, I just felt excluded. I've tried to think about it from her perspective, that maybe she felt intimidated. Maybe I reminded her of her mother. Maybe she felt she just wanted to be with people her own age and felt better about that. But I don't know. So those are just reasons that I've made up myself.
Fortunately, there is a student-run center on campus for mature students, and there are people who are pushing the administration to recognize both the enrichment that going back to school can provide, as well as the need for support systems in the face of those unique challenges. Trisha Van Ryn, for instance, focuses her research on mature students and student parents. She went back to school after a long break herself.
Okay, so my name is Trisha Van Ryn. I'm a PhD student in Family Relations and Human Development here at the University of Guelph, and my research is on the experiences of student parents in post-secondary education. I returned to school as a mature student with children back in 2004. And I returned to finish my undergrad education because I had had children and took a 12-year break, a brief break. And coming back to school as a mature student with my children at that time were 9 and 12, was a very isolating experience. When I first started back, I really felt like I was the only person in my classes. I was older. I stuck out like a sore thumb. I had other students come up to me and ask me if I was the TA or the instructor, which was, you know, it's really embarrassing. And it's like, no, I'm just an undergrad student.
Here's Margie again.
It's certainly very different from what I remember school being, partly because I remember a lot of partying and I didn't do much partying. It was really funny. I mean, my classmates would send out emails saying, you know, let's go eat Thai food Friday night. You know, we'll meet at my place at 10 and then we'll go at 11. Excuse me, 11? I think I'm in bed, but, you know, have fun, guys. So it was different socially. But I do like the fact that when you were in an academic environment, the boundaries that say, well, you know, you're older than I am, you're younger than I am, you're from this culture, you're from that one, those all go because you're working on a project or you're talking about similar ideas. So it's whatever you bring to that your value to the class is based on.
Trisha's research investigates this value. Namely, she is interested in the different backgrounds and circumstances that constitute the mature student and student-parent experience.
I had an opportunity to work as an undergrad research assistant on a federal government-funded project on student parents. So, of course, I went, hey, that's really interesting. Somebody's actually interested in my experiences. I ended up also doing an undergraduate thesis. And in that, rather than the quantitative numbers data from StatsCan, I did a qualitative study where I interviewed student parents about their experiences, how they are successful, what barriers they experience, how they're enabled to, you know, to continue in their studies and deal with all of these multiple responsibilities they have from home and from school and often from working as well. And really, it was one of those moments where often with research, you have a personal motivation to do it. And this really added to that personal motivation because I was going beyond my own understanding my own experiences and got to see what other students were experiencing and got to see those things that were so similar, that feeling of being isolated, the feeling of not being understood by family members and friends, of, you know, having trouble connecting on campus and just wanting a support network of like-minded peers. And also the other side of it, because it's not all just negative when you have this experience between two roles. It also can be positive. It can be very empowering. So there's also this concept called work-family enrichment, which is that experiences in one role then enrich or enable your act as resources in your other role. And you can see that when you talk to student parents and when they say that, you know, I did really great on this paper and I went home and I was feeling great and I was happy with my kids. So you see that positive side and you also see the negative side where they are stressing out about writing a paper and then maybe they're a little bit grumpier with their children or their partner. Or this same thing from their, you can see conflict coming the other direction in that maybe they have to miss classes because they have a sick child. So these additional responsibilities create a very unique experience for them as post-secondary students that's not always understood.
C'est une chanson qui nous ressemble. Toi, tu m'aimais.
So what we're hearing, it seems, is that we're most successful when we make school an enriching part of our lives, instead of drawing a strict boundary between school on the one hand and life on the other.
Right. So when we're little, it seems like all we have to do is go to school. As a kindergartner or first grader, you're just honestly a student. As children, we're happy or sad or scared, but we have to confront these emotions in order to enter school and in order to enter life. Because life and school, at that stage, don't seem to have definable boundaries.
But as we get older, as we get more freedom in high school like Simon, or take on more responsibility in university like Emily, other aspects of our lives beyond the academy take on more importance. We find we need breaks from school in order to allow for our lives to happen.
And so we might feel the need to mark off school as one thing and life as another thing. But our interviews with mature students seem to suggest that life and school don't have to be separate entities. When you go back to school after taking time off, your previous schooling has influenced the life you've led. And the life you've led enriches your experience as a scholar later in life. But it's impossible to say which is more meaningful, life or school, because at least for lifelong scholars, the two seem mutually inclusive.
So as you go off to school or life this fall, you might want to keep the following in mind.
Do you have any advice for people that aren't very good at going to school for the first time?
Well, I just don't really worry. I don't, like, freak out about, like, going to high school. There's people that were, like, because you're growing up, it was, like, grade 12s, mm-hmm. which are, like, I mean, adults. And some people were, like, kind of scared because you're, like, the grade 9s, mm-hmm. like the minor 9ers. Mm-hmm. Don't let it get to you, I guess.
Yeah.
Sometimes what I've found, and I tell my kids this, that money really isn't everything. And personally, I believe really strongly that it's important to follow your passion. And I've done that all my life, and my husband's done it. And so, yes, we still have a mortgage and we still have lots of debt, but we haven't spent our lives doing jobs we hate. You know, I think I had it in my head this would be a way to move myself up a ladder. Didn't work out that way at all. And maybe that's really not the point of it. But I'm glad I did it.
Do you want to tell us anything else?
No.
You sure?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going to turn it off.
You've been listening to Pioneer Radio on CFRU 93.3. That's our show. We hope you'll join us next week when we give you a totally biased rant against Facebook use in universities.
Unbiased, Kelly. Unbiased.
Remember, you can leave us stories about going back to school or the value of Facebook on our blog, pioneerradio.wordpress.com. See you next week.
To CFRU 93.3 FM.
The rights of tens of thousands of migrants working as living caregivers in Ontario are being neglected. As the name suggests, caregivers give care to those in need of assistance. But who's caring for the rights and needs of migrants working as living caregivers? Migrante Ontario is a non-profit organization advocating for the rights and well-being of migrants working as living caregivers. The passing of Bill C-50 has made it easier for people working in Canadian migrant worker programs to work with temporary status, but harder to gain permanent residency. Working with temporary status in Canada leaves the rights of migrant workers far less protected. However, most migrants who come to Canada are led to believe that they have the chance to become Canadian citizens. Interested in getting involved with the Guelph contingent of Migrante Ontario? Connect with us at migrante.ontario@gmail.com. That's migrante.ontario@gmail.com.
People of Earth, we realize that past relations between your world and ours have been strained on account of our repeated and failed attempts to enslave the human race. But we implore you to please heed our humble warnings against a more powerful force in our universe. The Central Services Radio Program, which airs on this radio station Monday mornings at 10 o'clock. Do not, we repeat, do not listen to Central Services. We have studied this broadcast. This is 1 hour of your life that you will never get back. The music is obnoxiously enjoyable, and you may be compelled to like it.